Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today we open with major national news that will affect many people here in San Diego County. President Trump's revised travel ban has been blocked by a federal court. We'll tell you what that means for immigrants and refugees on today's show. San Diego has received a federal disaster declaration, along with many other California counties, to help clean up damage from January's storms. Trump's executive order to hire thousands of new ICE and Border Patrol agents is raising concerns as Homeland Security considers lowering hiring standards, and we'll have details. The Congressional Budget Office's report is in on the Republican health care plan and concludes that the plan will hurt the health of senior citizens and poor people, as well as their pocketbooks. Learn how on today's show. Here in California, Monsanto has lost a major court case that's a win for consumers seeking to be informed about the dangers posed by chemicals. Plus, a bill moving through the legislature, authored by a San Diego assemblywoman, aims to provide legal help for California veterans who have been deported. San Diego County supervisors voted to look for new funds for road repairs after the condition of local roadways got downgraded. Supervisors also voted to ban all sales and farming of marijuana, even phasing out medical marijuana dispensaries that are already licensed, so we won't be seeing taxes on pot used to fill those potholes. Cal Fire will be conducting controlled burns across East County next week. And in La Mesa, the California Highway Patrol seeks witnesses to a freeway shooting on Interstate 8 that injured a young man. On the second half of our show today, we'll have some national stories from Public News Service, including details on what's slated for the chopping block on Donald Trump's budget, Sunshine Week for open government, and a controversy involving who will or won't be marching in an annual St. Patrick's Day parade. Hear about an East County fire chief who will now be heading up emergency services for the county, and learn about San Diego State's historic 120th anniversary this week. On Destination East County, we'll have all the most fun festivals and events coming up across our inland region, including St. Patrick's Day celebrations, a lilac festival, a desert art show, a taste of Julian, a chili cook-off in Jamul, and an event to help the homeless in La Mesa, plus many more. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ, where East County matters.
A federal judge in Hawaii has blocked implementation of President Donald Trump's revised travel ban just hours before it was scheduled to take effect. In a scathing 43-page ruling, U.S. District Judge Derek K. Watson wrote that there is a strong likelihood that the case, filed by the state of Hawaii, would be successful in proving that the executive order violates the U.S. Constitution by discriminating based on religion. The revised travel ban included several charges from an earlier ban, which had been blocked by a 3-judge panel on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Both orders ban all refugees from entering the U.S. for 120 days. The new order bans entry from 6 countries with predominantly Muslim populations: Iran, Libya, Somalia, Syria, Sudan, and Yemen, but it exempts Iraq. Also under the new order, Syrians are no longer banned indefinitely. The revised travel ban also eliminates restrictions on green card and visa holders. The judge's ruling means that for now, refugees from all countries and immigrants from the 6 Muslim nations cannot be banned from entering the U.S. unless normal vetting procedures show cause on an individual basis. The lawsuit challenging the new ban was filed by the state of Hawaii. The judge agreed with the state's assertions that the ban would harm the ability of businesses and universities in Hawaii to recruit top talent and hurt tourism. Hawaii also cited concerns of Ismail Leshik, imam of the Muslim Association of Hawaii. He is a citizen who feared that his mother-in-law, a Syrian who has applied for a visa, could be banned from entering the U.S. His lawyer argued that Muslims, such as Elshick, would face higher hurdles to see family because of religious faith, the Washington Post reports. Acting Solicitor General Jeffrey Wall argued on behalf of the Trump administration that there would be no irreparable harm because of the ban, a claim that seems far-fetched given that refugees would be denied safe passage out of countries where war and starvation are killing people on a daily basis. The United Nations this week warned that 20 million people are likely to die of starvation in four nations without immediate help. Three of those are on the list of nations from which Trump seeks to ban immigrants and refugees. Options for Trump include waiting for the Hawaii court to hear the full case or appealing to the Ninth Circuit, where a three-judge panel already blocked the earlier travel ban on constitutional grounds. Trump criticized the judge's decision to block his order as unprecedented judicial overreach, sharing at a rally in Nashville. He vowed to ultimately take his case to the U.S. Supreme Court, 10 News reports. Judge Watson cited Trump's own words and statements by his advisors as evidence that he intended to discriminate against Muslims. The judge wrote, "There is nothing veiled about the press release. Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States." The judge also cited a TV interview in which Rudolph Giuliani stated that Trump called him and asked him to find a legal way to order a Muslim ban. Justin Cox, an attorney with the National Immigration Law Center, called the ruling a victory, but noted that while the judge's order blocked the ban on refugees and immigrants from Muslim countries, the court did not block a lesser-known provision that requires Homeland Security and the Attorney General to publicize crimes committed by foreign nationals. The immigrant rights advocate called that provision a shaming device that is designed to perpetuate stereotypes in order to whip up resentment against immigrants. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
President Donald Trump has granted a federal disaster declaration requested by California Governor Jerry Brown in 15 California counties, including San Diego. That's due to severe storms that caused flooding, mudslides, and other damage from January 18th through January 23rd. The order authorizes federal assistance to supplement state, local, and tribal recovery efforts, along with some nonprofit organizations on a cost-sharing basis. In addition to San Diego, other counties approved for relief funds are El Dorado, Kern, Los Angeles, Mendocino, Napa, Orange, Riverside, Sacramento, San Luis Obispo, San Mateo, Santa Barbara, Santa Cruz, Trinity, Tuolumne, and Yolo counties. The Federal Emergency Management Agency has named Timothy Scranton as the federal coordinating officer for the recovery effort in these areas. Congressman Daryl Issa from San Diego voiced appreciation to the Trump administration for the disaster aid and urged any eligible organizations to review the federal options and contact his office if you're a constituent and you need help. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
President Donald Trump's executive order requires Immigrations and Customs Enforcement to hire 10,000 officers, including 5,000 Border Patrol agents. But where to find qualified officers and agents is a challenge for the agency, and some proposed solutions are raising concerns. Kevin McAleenan, acting Customs and Border Protection Commissioner, has written a memo proposing to exempt some law enforcement and former military personnel from taking lie detector tests, 10 News reports. Associated Press has reported that about two-thirds of Border Patrol applicants in the past have failed to pass lie detector tests. Whether that's because applicants are lying or because of hostile interrogations is debatable, but eliminating lie detector tests could raise the risk of hiring dishonest Border Patrol agents. The Border Patrol has also faced allegations of aggressive actions and recently paid a settlement in a lawsuit over death of an unarmed migrant at the San Ysidro border crossing. Hiring more ICE agents to handle mass deportations is also posing problems. The aggressive hiring pace increases the risk of adding to the ranks of rogue agents who have already been charged with abusing immigrants, the New York Times reports. Dozens of ICE agents and contract guards responsible for detaining and deporting undocumented immigrants have been arrested over the past 10 years on charges that include beating people, smuggling drugs into detention centers, sexual acts with detainees, and taking bribes to halt some deportations, agency documents and court records reveal. Moreover, this week a federal judge held the Border Patrol in Arizona in contempt of court for violating a court order. The Border Patrol failed to preserve surveillance video for a lawsuit accusing the agency of detaining migrants in inhumane conditions, including putting them in filthy, icy cold cells, Associated Press reported. Some photos released earlier showed detainees huddling together under a single thin blanket and a woman changing her baby's diaper on a floor strewn with trash, as well as rusted toilets and a broken water fountain. It is important for the public to have trust in the integrity of all law enforcement officers, particularly those charged with handling the most vulnerable people. But it remains unclear how the Trump administration will be able to dramatically increase hiring of ICE officers and Border Patrol agents without increasing the risk of abuses to migrants and detainees, given that these agencies are already straining to find qualified applicants and battling a documented record of abuses. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
Older and poorer Americans will be forced to pay over half of their income to buy health insurance under the House Republicans' health care plan or be left with no insurance at all, and some could pay up to 750% more than under Obamacare. That's what the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office has calculated. A 64-year-old earning a little over $26,000 would be expected to pay over $14,000 of that for health care, far more than the $1,700 a year in premiums under Obamacare. Ironically, the low-income senior earning $26,500 would pay almost the same premium as a senior earning $68,200. Why? Because the higher-income senior would be eligible for a tax credit to lower his or her premium, while the poor person who needs help more would get nothing. Young people would pay slightly less under the GOP bill. A 21-year-old earning $26,500 would pay $1,450 a year, down from $1,700 under Obamacare. But their benefits would also be slashed, such as for preventive care. Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act, helped 40 million people get insurance who were previously uninsured. The American Health Care Act, or Trump Care, that Republicans propose, would result in 24 million Americans losing health care coverage by 2026, with 14 million of those people losing their health care next year if the Republican plan takes effect. The White House's own estimate is even worse. It predicts that 26 million Americans will lose health insurance because they can't afford the higher rates. That includes 17 million kicked off Medicaid, 6 million knocked out of the individual market, and 3 million losing employer-based health care plans. In total, 54 million Americans would have no health care by 2026. Adding the newly uninsured to those who already lack insurance, that's nearly double the current level, which happens to be the lowest rate of uninsured people in the U.S. ever due to Obamacare. Block grants that amount to cuts in Medicaid to states will also force states to pare down benefits or cut who gets covered. Advocates for the disabled have voiced fears that some with disabilities could find themselves cut off from the care that they need. Ironically, a New York Times investigation revealed that health care coverage policies in red states, those heavily Republican areas, where many politicians refused to participate in the federal Medicaid assistance and tax credits under Obamacare, now have the worst rates of uninsured people in the nation. Today's uninsured tend to live in the South, and they tend to be poor, the Times notes. But it doesn't have to be that way. In blue states and a handful of red states that did adopt the exchange programs under Obamacare and that accepted the federal help that was provided, people have fared far better. The New York Times concludes, politics matter. Trump ran on promising to repeal Obamacare and replace it with something better. But it's hard to see what's better in the Republican plan, other than tax cuts for the wealthiest 2% of Americans and for insurance companies. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Rebecca Williamson with East County Magazine's Green Scene Report on KNSJ Radio. In a victory for consumers and public health, a Superior Court judge has blocked a constitutional challenge that Monsanto filed against the state of California over the state's efforts to warn consumers about a cancer-causing pesticide. California proposed to add glyphosate to the state's list of cancer-causing chemicals, meaning warning labels would be required anywhere the product was sold or used, as required by Proposition 65. Chemicals on the Prop 65 list are also prohibited from being discharged into any source of drinking water. Glyphosate is the active ingredient in Roundup, a herbicide manufactured by Monsanto. Glyphosate is the most heavily used herbicide in the world. In 2015, the World Health Organization concluded that glyphosate is probably carcinogenic. California issued its notice of intent to list glyphosate as a Proposition 65 chemical based on that finding. The Center for Food Safety intervened in that case last year in order to protect the public's right to know when it is being exposed to cancer-causing chemicals. Rebecca Sector, West Coast Director of the Center for Food Safety, hails the ruling as a huge victory for the health and well-being of Californians. Citizens deserve to know when they are being exposed to cancer-causing chemicals, adding, no corporation should be able to keep it a secret. The court's ruling is significant for setting precedent for other similar cases. The judge held that it is indeed constitutional for the state of California to rely on an independent expert agency to help guide its policy decisions that protect Californians' health and the environment. Adam Keats, senior attorney for the Center for Food Safety, concludes, especially at a time when many of those in charge are protecting our food, water, and environment, those same people are the ones who used to represent the interests of mega corporations. State and local measures like Prop 65 are the best legal tools we have to protect ourselves, our families, and our environment from harmful chemicals like Monsanto's glyphosate.
When immigrants signed up to serve in America's armed forces, they were promised that they would be given expedited citizenship as special provisions of the Immigration and Nationality Act allow. But now, President Trump has begun deporting these veterans who are immigrants. So San Diego Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez has introduced a bill to establish a fund to provide legal aid to help deported veterans. This week, Assembly Bill 386 passed the Senate Judiciary Committee with an 8-to-1 vote, winning strong bipartisan support. The American Civil Liberties Union, or ACLU, estimates that more than 250 veterans have been deported to 34 countries, although Immigration and Customs Enforcement does not keep records on this. Potentially, many more could be affected since an estimated 70,000 non-citizens enlisted in the U.S. military from 1999 to 2008, according to the Center for Naval Analysis, a research center for the U.S. Navy and Marine Corps. A recent report by the ACLU of California titled Discharged, Then Discarded, highlighted the federal government's policy of deporting immigrant veterans for minor misdemeanor offenses such as possession of marijuana. In many cases, the veterans who are deported were brought here as children, and they are being deported to countries where they do not speak the language or have any real connections. Assemblywoman Gonzalez Fletcher says, immigrants who serve and fight for our country earn the right to become citizens. That's common sense. It's a powerful way to recruit bright and talented young men and women, and it's federal law. But instead of keeping our promises, we've kicked these veterans out of the country they fought for. She concludes that these patriots have earned the right to return to this country as Americans and make restitution for their mistakes as Americans. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
The County Board of Supervisors voted 4-0 on Tuesday to direct staff to come up with a plan in 90 days for new funding sources for road repairs. The latest pavement condition index back in September gave the county a score of just 60, or fair, and that was before winter rains and flooding caused cracks and potholes to proliferate. The supervisor set a goal to raise that score to 70 or very good within 5 years. Chairwoman Diane Jacobs said it's a hard pill to swallow to admit the county has a problem keeping streets safe. The county has been getting less money from the state for road repairs and maintenance due to falling gas tax revenue statewide. Gas taxes have fallen from 39.5 cents a gallon on average 3 years ago to 27.8 cents today due to lower fuel prices. In addition, more people are driving fuel-efficient vehicles, so they're using less gas. Supervisor Bill Horn also accused legislators of diverting some gas tax revenues for purposes other than funding road repairs. He wants the county to be a squeaky wheel, asking the state for more money. Jacob indicated she will send letters to Governor Jerry Brown and state legislators, also asking staff to reach out to the local congressional members and Trump administration. The latter could prove challenging with the new budget proposed by Trump slashing funding for programs across the board. The president has indicated, however, that he wants to create an infrastructure program, leaving open the door for getting funds for local projects added into an infrastructure bill if Congress votes to approve it. Last year, the county had to spend a portion of its revenues on repaving roadways, but Jacob noted that deferring maintenance can create even costlier repairs later on. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jim Brewster.
If you see smoke in East County this week, don't panic. Cal Fire will be conducting prescribed burns over the next 2 weeks, starting with an area south of Pine Valley. The burns are designed to help reduce vegetation and invasive weeds, providing fuel breaks to help stop future wildfires. Smoke from the prescribed burns will be visible across San Diego County, according to Cal Fire. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The majority of voters in San Diego County, including most in the unincorporated areas, voted to legalize recreational marijuana last November. But instead of heeding voters' wishes for more access, San Diego supervisors voted 3-2 on Tuesday to outlaw all marijuana sales in unincorporated areas, including medical marijuana. Three licensed dispensaries already open and two approved for construction will have 5 years to shut down. Supervisors also voted to outlaw all farming of marijuana and hemp. Supervisors Diane Jacob, Kristen Gaspar, and Bill Horn voted for the ban. Supervisors Ron Roberts and Greg Cox voted against the ban, with Roberts speaking up in favor of respecting the will of voters. The ban was opposed by the San Diego Farm Bureau, medical marijuana patients, recreational pot advocates, and dispensary owners. It was supported by anti-drug speakers and some rural residents. The county's own planning commission recommended against the ban and in favor of regulations to allow legal sales. Commissioner Brian Woods attested that banning marijuana sales would lead to a black market with potentially harmful products. But some rural planners had different views. Patricia Riggs from Dehesa Valley Community Council urged supervisors to support the ban, stating, "We have enjoyed small-town living in a very caring community. It has taken decades to educate the public about the unhealthy effects of smoking. Now we have the ugly head of marijuana rising up." Others voiced concerns over a potential increase in drugged driving or addiction. Lincoln Fish, owner of the Outliers Collective near Gillespie Field in El Cajon, calls the ban unfair, CW6 reports. He says, "We played by the rule, and now you're changing the game on us." He warns that the ban will prevent access to safe products by patients. But Supervisor Jacob voiced concerns over impacts of marijuana on children, though sales to minors are prohibited. She also contended that problems in Colorado and other areas where recreational marijuana has been legalized should be prevented by banning it here. Ironically, supervisors voted to outlaw pot, a potentially lucrative source of tax revenues, in the same meeting where they bemoaned a lack of funds to fix potholes and repair roads amid falling gas tax revenues. In Washington state, from July 2014, when recreational marijuana was legalized, to July 2016, sales have exceeded $1 billion, bringing in over $250 million in state excise taxes. Revenues are growing higher each month, the Seattle Post-Intelligencer reports. In Oregon, where recreational pot is also legal, the state's Liquor Control Commission, which regulates and licenses recreational marijuana facilities, reports that 12,640 jobs have been created by the industry. In January alone, recreational marijuana sales in Oregon topped $20 million, and medical marijuana sales generated another $2.8 million. Tax revenues from all marijuana sales in Oregon, Washington, and Colorado are now over $335 million a year, the Seattle Post-Intelligencer reports. Some counties have also found ways to boost local revenues. In Pueblo County, Colorado, a 2% excise tax on all marijuana farmed there has raised $425,000 that's being used to pay to send local students to college, officials announced in February. The tax will go up 1% a year until 2021, offering even more help for students to avoid student loan debt and giving new meaning to the term higher education. California residents will pay a 15% tax on sales of recreational marijuana starting in 2018, with revenues used to support communities that have been most harmed by the war on drugs. Supervisor Jacobs cited concerns over the fact that marijuana is still illegal at the federal level and the possibility that the Trump administration could crack down on states that have allowed marijuana sales and use. However, Attorney General Jeff Sessions, at a meeting of law enforcement officials this week in Virginia, told reporters that while he opposes all drug use, he believes much of the Obama administration's guidelines that have backed off enforcement of marijuana in states that have legalized it are valid. Specifically, he stated, the Cole Memorandum set up some policies under President Obama's Department of Justice about how cases should be selected in those states and what would be appropriate for federal prosecution, much of which I think is valid, Huffington Post reports. Sessions has previously made comments suggesting that any federal enforcement efforts would likely target recreational pot, not medical cannabis, in states where the latter is legal. Moreover, the growing number of states that have legalized marijuana are pressuring the federal government not to crack down, citing substantial new revenues pouring into state coffers from marijuana taxation. Hardest hit by San Diego supervisors' decision will be patients in rural mountain and desert areas who will have to travel long distances to purchase medical marijuana, including patients with debilitating medical conditions such as cancer. Our local supervisors have a long history of fighting marijuana legalization. In 2006, the county sued rather than implement a new state law approved by voters legalizing medical marijuana. After losing on appeal, the county appealed to the state Supreme Court and ultimately the U.S. Supreme Court, which both refused to hear the county's case. Rudy Reyes of Lakeside, the worst burn survivor of the Cedar Fire, has been battling the county for more than a decade, advocating for safe, legal access to medical marijuana, which he has used to relieve pain from burns and multiple surgeries. He now teaches a cannabis certification course at San Diego State University. Reyes told East County Magazine that he views supervisors' decision to outlaw all cannabis sales as a violation of the state's constitution, since Californians have voted for legalization of both medical and recreational marijuana. The recreational pot initiative does allow local jurisdictions to regulate or even ban recreational pot, but it's unclear why supervisors believe banning medical marijuana sales would withstand a court challenge, given that they lost on the identical issues previously. Reyes suggests a new lawsuit may be in the works. He says supervisors are, quote, forcing legal retaliation via citizens overturning their vote and wasting more money over their prejudices, adding that the county supervisors have a bad history of wasting taxpayers' money on cannabis litigation and now throwing away much-needed business tax dollars that could be recovered by taxing cannabis sales, in his words. He predicts that the more the county seeks to restrict access to cannabis, the more the pro-cannabis community will gain strength and overcome. Supervisors will have a second reading of the ordinance at next Wednesday's meeting, which starts at 9 a.m. The ban is set to take effect next month, except for the 5 legal dispensaries that will be allowed to stay open for 5 years to recover their costs. Patients seeking medical marijuana will then have to travel to cities such as La Mesa or Lemon Grove, where voters legalized medical cannabis dispensaries in November. So those city councils have moved to respect the will of voters and establish regulations for lawful operation of such clinics. County residents who want to use weed recreationally can grow their own. Up to 6 plants per household are allowed by the new state law. However, some places, such as El Cajon, have restricted growing to indoors only. Some legal experts say that landlords can outlaw growing completely, leaving some would-be recreational pot users without options to grow or buy recreational pot legally here. People seeking access to legal pot in San Diego County are staking their hopes on the next 2 elections. 2 supervisors will be termed out in 2018 and 2 more in 2020. Gaspar, the only supervisor who won't be termed out before the ban takes effect, could face a challenge in her re-election race from a proponent of legal cannabis access. The marijuana industry is rumored to be planning a ballot initiative that would force the county to allow legal sales of medical and recreational marijuana, as well as agricultural growing of cannabis and hemp crops. The ranks of voters willing to require the county to allow farming and sales of marijuana could well include not only medical and recreational cannabis, but other citizens supportive of raising revenues from taxing pot to fund priorities such as filling potholes. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jim Brewster.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Rebecca Williamson with KNSJ Radio with the Crime Beat Report. The California Highway Patrol is seeking witnesses in a freeway shooting that occurred Sunday morning around 4 a.m. An Infiniti car carrying four young people in their 20s was traveling east on Interstate 8 near Fletcher Parkway in La Mesa when another vehicle pulled alongside them, and for reasons that remain unknown, someone in that vehicle opened fire. At least five rounds were fired. One bullet struck a man in the back seat, injuring his shoulder. He was taken to Sharp Memorial for treatment. Shortly before the attack, the Infiniti had been parked at a Denny's restaurant off 70th Street, where the driver tried unsuccessfully to fix a rear window that was stuck in the down position. The victims are believed to have been randomly chosen, not targeted, though the investigation is continuing. The shooting occurred very close to where Zusha Brown was fatally shot in the head on I-8 in La Mesa back in 2013. That shooting also occurred at 4 a.m. Three gang members were later arrested and charged with murder in that case. Sunday's shooting resulted in a shutdown of the freeway while police searched for evidence. Anyone with information is asked to call the California Highway Patrol at 619-401-2000.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, March 17th, 2017. I'm Eric Tegedoff. Here's the news we're following this St. Patrick's Day. President Trump unveils his budget proposal, and we look at the new budget's effect on everything from food assistance to environmental restoration to national parks. And why a veterans group in Boston is being excluded from the St. Patrick's Day parade there. First, we turn to the White House. President Trump released his budget proposal for 2018, and while there are many losers, there's one big winner, the military. Defense spending would rise by nearly 10% next year, but there are plenty of other agencies that will see double-digit cuts percentage-wise, including the Education Department, Health and Human Services, the Labor Department, and much more. However, Congress, including members of Trump's party, have asserted that they hold the purse strings and that there will be changes to the proposal. The budget proposes large cuts to the Department of Agriculture as well, and that has some calling it a war on people in poverty. Andrea Sears reports.
The administration's spending plan would slash the U.S. Department of Agriculture by $4.7 billion, a 21% cut. Joel Berg, who heads the group Hunger Free America, held senior executive service positions in the USDA for 8 years during the Clinton administration. Berg says by cutting or eliminating programs that help poor and middle-income rural Americans, Trump would be hurting voters who were instrumental in putting him in office.
He's cutting rural economic development programs, food programs, programs that bring fresh water to rural areas, which will mean local taxpayers will have to pick up the tab and pay more.
The administration says the proposed budget supports critical USDA activities while streamlining or eliminating redundant and lower priority programs.
National parks are also affected by Trump's budget, and with attendance at record levels in 2016, America's national parks appear to be more popular than ever.
But advocates for the National Park Service say a $12 million backlog in needed maintenance and repairs could mean fewer people will be able to enjoy America's vast network of parks and monuments. Kimberly Pope with the Sierra Club says it will be up to the new Secretary of the Interior, Ryan Zinke, to restore the infrastructure of the nation's 412 national parks.
What needs to be done, really, is that the Trump administration and our new Secretary of the Interior should step up and offer a budget that reflects and prioritizes funding our park system for the long run for all of us.
Zinke, formerly the sole U.S. House member from Montana, took over the Interior Department on March 1st and says his top priority is to tackle the backlog. President Trump's initial 2018 budget proposal calls for an overall 12% cut in agency funding, though it calls for an unspecified increase in parks maintenance.
That was Mark Richardson reporting. Advocates for the Chesapeake Bay are calling the budget proposed by the Trump administration devastating to the Bay and the millions of people who rely on it for clean drinking water.
The budget proposed for fiscal year 2018 recommends the entire $73 million budget for the EPA's Chesapeake Bay program be eliminated. Shantae Coleman, who heads the Choose Clean Water Coalition, says it would stop cleanup efforts in their tracks and would also undo progress that's been made, which has led to less pollution in rivers and streams that feed into the bay.
There's about 13 million people from across the six states and D.C. that rely on the bay for recreation and drinking water. Our tourism and fishing industries rely on the bay.
The president released his $1.1 trillion budget outline Thursday that includes a $54 billion increase in defense spending. It cuts the EPA by almost a third, leaving no money for international climate change research or mitigation, or for the Clean Power Plan. I'm Veronica Carter reporting.
Congressional Budget Office figures showed the main GOP health care replacement for Obamacare would have a negative impact on rural areas and especially on older residents. Dan Hyman has more.
The House's American Health Care Act would let insurance companies charge up to 40% more for folks in their 50s and 60s. And Edwin Park with the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities says at the same time, cuts to Medicaid and especially the bill's reduced subsidies would land hard on rural states.
Let's say a 60-year-old making $30,000 a year, they would see the value of that help fall by as much as three quarters.
Republicans point to other CBO projections that the replacement plan would reduce the budget deficit. Park says most of the savings comes from shifting Medicaid costs onto the states. He says the very wealthy and some big healthcare corporations would see huge tax cuts.
It was front page news last weekend when a gay veterans group called OutVets was given permission to march in the Boston St. Patrick's Day parade today. But another group of veterans is still prohibited from joining the walk.
Pat Scanlon and his group Veterans for Peace still is on the outs and won't be allowed to walk again this year.
I'm a decorated Vietnam veteran. I was in military intelligence. That's a little more of a twist to it. I grew up in an Irish Catholic family and born on St. Patrick's Day and not allowed to walk in this parade. Incredible.
Scanlon says parade organizers had little choice but to reconsider their decision on OutVets because major politicians and sponsors were threatening to pull out from the parade. There are conflicting reports as to whether OutVets will accept the belated invitation, but Scanlon says he's sure he knows what Veterans for Peace would do.
If it were the other way around and we were in solidarity with them, I can tell you we would not walk because we will not leave anyone behind, just like we wouldn't leave the LGBT community behind.
I'm Mike Clifford.
I'm Eric Tegedoff for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
The county's new administrator of emergency services is a familiar face to many people in East County. Former Lakeside Fire Chief Andy Parr served for 37 years in Lakeside's fire department, where his emergency response experience included the Cedar and Witch Creek wildfires. He's also worked as a paramedic, EMS coordinator, and EMS fire liaison, as a member of the county's Fire Chiefs Association Charter Board. He served on key task forces and interacted with hospitals on heavy casualty incidents. He's taught paramedic programs on topics such as smoke inhalation, Parr also served as zone chief for the county's central zone, which includes the 8 fire agencies in East County. Top officials at the county's Health and Human Services Agency describe Parr as an experienced emergency manager, serving in many capacities on large-scale incidents all over the western U.S., in a letter sent to EMS groups countywide. As administrator, Parr will oversee emergency medical services as part of the Health and Human Services Agency's new Medical Care Services Division. He will oversee pre-hospital care, hospitals, base hospitals, and special care, such as for strokes and trauma. He will also be responsible for completing rollout of a new data collection system designed to provide information to the state, local agencies, and EMS providers. The system will integrate certifications, licenses, and authorizations held by more than 10,000 credentialed EMS providers working for over 50 agencies across San Diego County. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
This is Rebecca Williamson with KNSJ Radio with an education report. Back in 1897, William McKinley was sworn in as President of the United States. Queen Victoria celebrated her Diamond Jubilee in England. The Klondike Gold Rush began, and San Diego State University was born. This week, the university is celebrating its 120th anniversary. The school's first campus was located in downtown San Diego and was called the State Normal School of San Diego. It was just a few rented stores upstairs above a drugstore. 7 teachers taught English, math, and history to 91 students back then. The campus later moved to University Heights and eventually to its current location. The name changed to San Diego State Teachers College, and in 1960, it became part of the new California State College system. 3 years later, President John F. Kennedy gave the commencement address at San Diego State University and received the university's first honorary doctorate. In the early 1970s, San Diego State College became the San Diego State University. And now in its 120th year, SDSU has a 300-acre campus here in San Diego, as well as a satellite campus in Calexico. Today, SDSU is educating 35,000 students, has 1,700 full and part-time faculty, and has over 291,000 living alumni with degrees. San Diego State University also contributes billions of dollars each year to California's economy. It is now ranked among the nation's top 75 public universities and top 150 national universities in U.S. News & World Report's annual ranking of America's best colleges. The university plans an open house on March 18th to mark its 120th year of educating students here in San Diego.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes St. Patrick's Day celebrations, a Circle of Art show in Borrego Springs, a lilac festival in Santa Isabel, as well as a violin and piano concert at Cuyamaca College.
Plus, we'll tell you about coming attractions, including an April Fool's Week favorite, the Peg Leg Smith Liars Contest, Sweet Pea Day in Front Springs, Hot Rods in the Chili Cook-Off in Humble, the Rolando Street Fair, A Taste of Julian, Spring Harp Fest in La Mesa, and Help for the Homeless with La Mesa Conversations.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
Hooley's Irish Pub and Grill will feature Irish musical entertainment on St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, at the Grossmont Center location. Tony Cummins, 2-time nominee for Irish Music Association Awards, will perform at 8:30 p.m. At Hooley's Rancho San Diego location, Lexington Green will perform also at 8:30 p.m. With authentic Irish food and drinks, Hooley's was recently named the best Irish pub outside of Ireland by an association of Irish pub owners worldwide. For details, you can visit Hooley's.com.
You can savor a St. Patrick's Day green-themed cottage classic tea at Julian Tea from Thursday, March 16th through Monday, March 20th. The special set menu starts with potato leek soup and pumpkin soup with mini cheese scones, followed by corned beef and green-themed finger sandwiches and a shamrock scone with curd, jam, and whipped cream, plus dessert. A children's tea is also available. For details and reservations, you can visit julientea.com.
The 28th Annual Circle of Art Show and Art Sale Celebrating Art in the Desert will take place Saturday, March 18th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Sunday, March 19th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Christmas Circle in Borrego Springs. Over 60 artists will display their works. There will also be live music performances and foods available. Plus, this is an ideal time of year to watch for spring wildflowers blooming across the Anza Borrego Desert. For details, see circleofart.org.
Fort Cross Old Timey Adventures in Santa Ysabel invites you to savor springtime at a lilac festival on March 25th and 26th. Stroll through organic, sweet-smelling lilac groves in the mountains near Julian, or hop on a hayride to enjoy views at a scenic nature loop. Plus, you'll find an array of unusual activities reflecting the community's rich pioneer heritage. Jesse Cross, dance caller and music man, will play live music and lead any willing participants through square dancing in Hootenanny Dance Steps. Listen to a lively hoedown. You can also try your skill at tomahawk throwing, visit a petting zoo, get your face painted, make a fairy garden, paint a flower vase to keep and dip your own lilac-themed candle the old-fashioned way. Potted lilacs and fragrant lilac stems will be available for purchase. For full details on the Lilac Festival, you can visit fortcross.com.
Violinist Alexandra Keegan and pianist Justin Gray will perform sonatas for violin and piano at Cuyamaca College's Performing Arts Theater on March 22nd at 7 p.m. Keegan is a Cuyamaca College instructor and conductor of the East County Youth Symphony. Gray is the music director of the Welk Resort San Diego Theater, as well as the chairman and founder of the San Diego Interfaith Choir and Orchestra. For tickets and details, visit cuyamaca.edu/performingarts.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
On Sunday, March 26th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., the 21st Annual Rolando Street Fair will be held on Rolando Boulevard, south of El Cajon Boulevard. The event includes over 130 vendors with handcrafts, food, carnival rides, and kids' activities. Live music bands will include Len Rainey and the Midnight Players, Trey Toss and the band called Life, The Routine, Paul Cannon, Iron Sagewood, and Cassidy and the Music. Nearly 15,000 people attend this family-friendly event each year.
Each year on the first Saturday of April, the Anza Borrego Desert State Park attracts storytellers from all over the globe to compete in the annual Peg Leg Smith Liars Contest. This year's event will be held on April 4th. Thomas L. Smith, better known as Peg Leg Smith in the 1800s, was a mountain man, prospector, and spinner of tall tales. Legends about his lost gold mine have grown through the years. Many people have searched the desert for its fabled wealth, but no one has found the lost treasure. All comers are welcome to enter the contest. Sign-up is on arrival at the contest site, which is held at the Peg Leg Smith Memorial, about 7 miles east of Borrego Springs along Route S-22. Presentations are done in the order of sign-up. Stories should be of no more than 5 minutes in length. Another little joke. Tall tales should be about lost gold and or Peg Leg Smith. Costumes and other original touches are always appreciated by the crowd and the judges. For more information on this annual contest, visit peglegsmith@desert.com.
Lemon Grove Historical Society's next History Alive event will present three members of the Chosen Few, veterans from the Battle of Chosin during the Korean War. A 17-day battle fought in sub-zero weather against all odds. You can hear their stories and see artifacts from the battlefield on April 6th at 7 p.m. in the H. Lee House Cultural Center. For more information, you can call 619-460-4353.
It's Sweet Pea Day at Summers Pass Farms in Flint Springs on Saturday, April 8th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. You can cut your own bouquet starting at 11 a.m. until the beautiful blooms are gone. You're invited to weave through a towering sweet pea maze in full glory. You can also picnic on a grassy area and enjoy live music in the coffee bar's shady pavilion while savoring springtime in East County. For details and directions, visit summerspassfarms.com.
The Hamul Kiwanis Club is revving up for its 9th annual Hot Rod and Chili Cook-Off on April 8th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Pio Pico, Thousand Trails in Hamul. Guests can savor chili tasting, check out classic hot rods, cool off in a beer garden, or vie for prizes in drawings and a silent auction. For more information, you can visit hamulkiwanis.org.
The 9th annual Taste of Julian will be held on April 8th. Serving up rural dining adventures. Taste of Julian is a self-guided culinary tour of unique restaurants, wineries, and breweries. For tickets and details, go to visitjulian.com.
The 18th annual Spring Harp Fest showcases harmonica players' musical jam fests and will be held on Saturday, April 15th from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. at Harry Griffin Park in La Mesa. Donations from this event are used to purchase harmonicas for local schools. Get the lineup of talent scheduled at springharpfest.org.
Homelessness in La Mesa will be the topic for the next La Mesa Conversation Mixer on Thursday, March 23rd from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at Johnny B's Restaurant. The guest speaker will be Lois Knowlton, homelessness and affordable housing advocate at La Mesa First United Methodist Church. Guests are encouraged to bring items for the church outreach team's Fresh Start Saturday program, which helps homeless and near homeless neighbors receive a free breakfast, take a shower, get clothing and shoes, have a haircut, and take a bag lunch to go. Items that the Fresh Start Saturday team needs include non-perishable foods, bottled water, and clothing suitable to wear for job interviews. To reserve space, visit lamesaconversations.org.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
Tax season is well underway. The deadline is April 18th. Tax time can mean loads of stress, especially because the U.S. tax code has become increasingly complicated. But Nancy McPherson, State Director for AARP California, says the AARP Foundation's tax aid program aims to alleviate some of the difficulties in figuring it all out.
The foundation's focus is offering free tax preparation help to anyone, and specifically people who are 50 and older who cannot afford a tax preparation service.
Some tax experts say the average taxpayer doesn't need a tax attorney, but a service like TaxAid can offer helpful reassurance and guidance for basic tax questions and getting returns filed. McPherson points out that the trained TaxAid volunteers also are familiar with deductions you might not even know about. Just last year, she says, the TaxAid program helped Californians obtain over $96 million in income tax refunds and nearly $18 million in earned income tax credits.
Many taxpayers are unaware of an earned income tax credit, or they think that they don't qualify for it, and it's actually one of the most important forms of income support for low-income workers. So TaxAid can help people figure out if they do qualify so that they get the credits that they deserve.
Last year, nearly 3,000 volunteers in California helped almost 200,000 people file their federal and state income tax returns. McPherson says her mom uses the tax aid program, which is available nationwide.
My own mother in South Carolina uses it. She's 92 years old. She likes to prepare her own taxes, but she also likes to have someone check it to see that she did it correctly, and someone can go over that with her to make sure she didn't miss anything.
She adds people don't have to be AARP members or over 50 to use the service, but it's important to get an appointment and ask what types of documentation you'll need to bring. For Public News Service, I'm Logan Pollard.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is John Pastier with East County Magazine's Green Scene Report. After years of drought, torrential rains during this wet winter have raised levels dramatically at local reservoirs. The Lower Otay Reservoir reached 100% capacity last week, so a spillway was opened for the overflow. Lake Poway came within inches of overflowing, closing hiking trails at the lake. In East County, Lake Jennings is at 92% capacity, Lake Murray is at 91%, and San Vicente has reached 76%. El Capitan is now at 40%, up from 33% just 1 week earlier. Loveland Reservoir is at 58%. Lake Cuyamaca is at 44%. Lake Sutherland, 35%. And Sweetwater, 28%. Even Barrett Lake, which had been drained down by the city of San Diego to very low levels to supply drinking water during the drought, is now back at 28.5%. Only Lake Morena is still very low at 5.8%, due to the city of San Diego draining the reservoir down to 5% and evaporation dipping it further to a mere 2.8% just a couple of months ago. But even 5.8% is a welcome improvement, more than doubling the level in recent weeks. Elsewhere in the county, Lake Hodges is 80% full and Lake Miramar nearly 85%. From Sunday to Tuesday this week, the deluge dropped more than 9 inches of rain on Palomar Mountain. Here in East County, nearly 8 inches fell on Mount Woodson. Lake Cuyamaca reached over 6 inches of rain, and more than 5 inches in Ramona were recorded. This Saturday and Sunday, a storm swooping in from Alaska is forecast to bring 20 to 40% chance of even more rain, the National Weather Service predicts. So keep your umbrellas handy and remember, all these showers are great not only for boosting local water supplies, but also filling up reservoirs enjoyed by local residents and tourists for fishing, water sports, boating, or exploring our local lakes aboard a kayak or canoe.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.